It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. This is Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors Show here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me. And Memorial Day weekend is traditionally the kickoff of summer. It may not feel like summer in a lot of places. That's because Memorial Day is about as early as it can be. It's a week earlier, which means that come Labor Day, Labor Day is a week earlier. Labor Day will be obviously on Monday, the 1st of September. That's as early as it can be. So it's not as though we got an extra week of summer between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It's just earlier on the calendar, but hope that this is a kickoff to a great summer and the great outdoors for all of you listening. And I'm going to start off today with some news on technology and then a discussion about events in Washington. And no, I don't think the sky is falling. It obviously depends on what you read. And I try to read and listen to as many varying points of view as I can on this discussion of the environment and conservation and everything that's happening with the administration. And so last week, you would have read the articles about the cuts to the National Weather Service and how, in fact, they were lots of them about how our ability to forecast hurricanes is going to be badly weakened. We're not going to be able to forecast the weather as well. It's going to cause air traffic transportation problems because we're not going to have as good information for pilots. It was pretty much doom and gloom. Today, AI is poised to revolutionize weather forecasting. A new tool shows great promise. Just a week later, and we're not going to be able to forecast well because of the cuts to personnel in the National Weather Service. And now, as it was mentioned a week ago when these cuts were announced, that they thought there was technology on the way, there indeed is. Microsoft, NVIDIA, Huawei, and others are producing AI-based forecasting models, and forecasting of weather is predicted to change enormously, not only in the coming years, but actually in the coming months. A Microsoft model can make accurate weather predictions on a 10-day forecast quickly and make it more accurately than currently is taking place, and it's designed to produce weather in real time, weather forecasts. So this is a fast-developing field. We know that in AI, but we don't often think of it as to how it's going to have applications to the outdoors and to conservation. And I come from the glass is always half full philosophy on life, and that when there's bad news, there's generally good news coming. And in some cases, the good news is better. So what we're really seeing, and it's not, I don't know why it's not more widely reported, but what we're seeing is a sea change in how the government is going to collect data, not only on weather, but how it's going to collect data on bird populations, how it's going to collect information on agricultural practices. Everything is changing quickly. And that change is being driven by, of course, the incredible development of AI, artificial intelligence. And it comes with the realization that fewer people are going to be needed in the future to the jobs that are taking place today. So the forecasting of weather is just one of them. And it's on my mind because just literally a couple days ago, there were a number of comments about how the cuts in the proposed budget for the coming year would just eviscerate the National Weather Service. And yet we find out 2 days later that actually there's technology that's not way down the pipeline, but it's here now. And Microsoft is planning to roll it out. So that is one of the things that is occurring. The other thing that's occurring, which I don't think any of us really realize, and I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm not taking a position one way or the other. The amount of work, research work that is carried out by universities. It is a large force for research in America funded by us, the U.S. taxpayer. And maybe what's brought this into focus is what's happening with Harvard University and some other places where research is being called into question. But I think that the larger question is not only are we really aware of the amount of research that we're funding at all these universities, which could be a terrific thing. Again, I'm not judging it for better or for worse, but what is going to happen when this research is not funded? There are all kinds of studies that are in midstream that are being stopped funding on, you could say, well, that's a good idea, or it's not a good idea. That's not the point of my mentioning this. The point of my mentioning this is that America has developed a relationship with its universities, whether it's an engineering school like Purdue, highly acclaimed, whether it's in conservation, whether it's in climate change, whether it's in highway transportation. Various universities around the country are known for doing excellent research in certain fields. And this research is largely funded by the United States government. And what's coming into light now is the extent of this research. So whether you're a fan of Harvard or not really is not the point. The point is that all university research is coming under scrutiny to determine whether or not it's wasteful, to determine whether or not it's in line with a political agenda. And I'm not sure that has ever been the case before. I think university research has largely been funded based upon its merits. I have a long time familiarity with work carried out by Ohio State, which has done the leading work on coyote research through Dr. Stan Garrett and the Cook County Forest Preserve and the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. And that's not political research. But if you end up being a university that is out of favor with politics in Washington, you might find that your research is being cut more to a greater degree than universities or states that are not out of favor with the administration. And I don't think that's a positive direction for America. I think that we have to recognize that our universities have provided us with incredible advancements in research and so many postdocs and so much, whether it's healthcare or environment or whether it's agriculture, so much research has come out of our universities that has improved the quality of our lives that could have never been done by the federal government alone, could never have been done by the private sector alone. And again, I come back just to the engineering work, and I'm mentioning Purdue because they're the foremost engineering school, certainly in the Midwest, if not America. And they rely heavily on cooperation with the United States government to do all kinds of engineering work. And you've got agricultural universities like Mississippi State and Iowa State and all the agricultural universities that are doing ag research. This is research that's been used to increase our yields. This has been developed new crop varieties. It's research that's been used to fight disease. So before we go and target universities and say that they are not spending taxpayer dollars well, we should look at the research they're conducting and determine whether or not we really feel that that research is in the national best interest. And I would offer that most of that research is in the nation's best interest. And when I come back from the break in a moment, I'm going to talk about the research that's been done on migratory bird populations for decades. And yes, technology is going to make some of the work that we're doing no longer necessary. The speed of change of AI is rapidly going to reinvent how we do many forms, not only of research, but how we do many forms of wildlife and wetlands monitoring and all those kinds of things. But we may not be there yet today to simply stop so much of what's being done. And if you've listened to me for the past 25 years, you know that I am no fan of big government. I'm not a fan of government waste. I am a fan of doing things well. And I believe the federal government has a role in assisting the private sector wherever possible to do things well. And I think that the combination of the private sector working in cooperation with the government has produced incredible victories for our country. And I think also when you look at the conservation field, you look at organizations like Ducks Unlimited and others, Nature Conservancy, Conservation Fund, et cetera, who have found ways to deliver much more on the ground than they ever could alone by working with the federal government. And the federal government never could have delivered these programs on the ground to begin with. So I'm a little worried that we're, pardon the phrase, we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater in a bit of haste here. But we'll find out. But certainly, when I started off with talking about, there are major, major advances coming. And when it comes to predicting weather, AI is, in fact, I think, going to replace all of us. It's brighter than we are. I hate to say that. Or at least it appears like it might be coming brighter than we are. When I come back, I'm going to talk about the waterfowl breeding ground surveys, which are also in a period of flux. I'm going to also talk about West Nile and bird flu. Thank you so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland, Chevrolet Dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I'm going to switch from talking about some of the advances in AI and technology that's coming so quickly we can't keep up with it and how it might impact the monitoring of wildlife populations to the annual waterfowl breeding grounds surveys, which have been in place since 1955, with one exception, and that being the COVID year, 2021. They did not do the surveys. Currently, the funding for doing the waterfowl breeding ground surveys appears to be in question. And my question to many people is, why is there so little attention being paid to this? This is supposed to be the seminal survey work of any game bird population, or any bird population, in fact, any wildlife population in the world. It's the longest running annual survey of the scale on which it is built. It provides invaluable information on wetlands conditions, on waterfowl populations, and it's what the Fish and Wildlife Service bases all of its waterfowl management on. Part of the reason there may not be such a great outcry right now in it going away, or at least being halted, is that many of the constituents that are being served by this survey have been questioning it for a number of years as to whether or not it's really accurate. So when the customer of something questions its validity, when that entity comes under threat, the customer may not be the first person to raise their hand and say, save it. And I think that's what we're seeing here to some extent. The waterfowling community at large has been questioning the accuracy of these surveys now for a number of years, believing that potentially they are based on outdated survey formats, that they're not using the most modern technology, that land uses have changed and they don't take those into account, and that the way we predict breeding populations of birds also may not have been the most accurate. And I'll give you just an example. They used to see if they counted 4 drake mallards sitting on a pond, they thought that there was a hen mallard nesting nearby. Well, it may not be the case. Those drake mallards may be sitting there without a hen mallard anywhere nearby because there aren't enough hen mallards. In the case of pintail, the same thing. The population is so skewed that when you see several drakes sitting there, you just assume a hen is on a nest nearby, but it could be actually there's no hen nearby at all. So there's a lot of question going into the accuracy of these surveys. And on the other hand, there's a big drive coming to how do we modernize these surveys? How do we use high technology to get much more accurate results? And then you throw in the equation that says, what happens if these surveys have actually been overestimating bird populations all these years? And we actually have a lot fewer ducks than we thought we had. And don't just dismiss that out of hand to say that, oh, that can't be the case. It very well might be the case that we have been overestimating breeding populations. There's some very senior biologists in the waterfowl world who think that the shifting of wetlands more towards roadside ditches, because that's where all the drainage goes, has caused an overcounting of wetlands consistently across the prairie breeding grounds, and that the dynamics used for estimating the breeding pairs, which I discussed a second ago, could be actually not as accurate. So it's not far-fetched that the breeding ground surveys have been overestimating populations, and also from on an annual basis, they sometimes show wild swings between breeding seasons for green-winged teal, blue-winged teal, pintail, etc. And these swings are not accounted for biologically. They're accounted for by weather patterns. So the whole thing put in a blender comes back and says the waterfowl breeding ground survey, which has been the hallmark of scientific success all these years, well, maybe it's not as good as it was designed to be. And maybe modern technology through the use of drones, through the use of thermal energy, through the use of Google Earth, and who knows what's coming in the next couple of years, could actually replace the need to fly airplanes all over the prairies and to have individuals running around on the ground in cars, ground truthing what the airplanes are telling them. It seems to me that we are on the cusp of a total sea change in how we're going to evaluate populations, not only of waterfowl, but all kinds of birds. And so when the Fish and Wildlife Service is facing potential either great reduction or elimination of the breeding ground survey, in the near term, that's extremely problematic. We need this data. Even if it's not the best data we can get, we need the data until we come up with a better means to get better data. So it is important that the surveys are continued. Anyone who thinks it's not important is not looking at the long term, and they're also underestimating the impact of the anti-hunting groups who would use the cessation of surveys, breeding ground surveys, to say the Fish and Wildlife Service does not have the data now to carry on with waterfowl hunting seasons. And that is a definite threat. I don't think it's idle at all. So hopefully Congress comes to recognition that the waterfowl breeding ground surveys are an essential element of waterfowl management, an essential element of wetlands management, but that they also move forward to modernizing the entire process when that's available so that we don't rely on old technology and old means to get modern day information. But we are not there yet. We will be, I'm sure, in the next few years. But in the meantime, we cannot jettison a program that's been serving the continent, Canada, and the United States well since 1955. Maybe a little bit antiquated. There's a better method potentially coming. But in the meantime, we need the waterfowl breeding ground survey. So with 30 seconds left, I simply want to say there's a lot of research coming out right now about bird flu and West Nile virus. I'll cover it more in the coming weeks. But the basic bottom line here is both seem to be expanding. Avian flu is expanding across the country and into species it hadn't been infecting before. Scientists are concerned about it. It's something we need to pay attention to, not alarmed, but it appears to be mutating and advancing, and that is not something that was on our radar screen 10 years ago or so. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. In the meantime, happy Memorial Day to all of you. Happy kickoff to summer, and I hope you have a great and safe week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.